Hello, good morning. You're very welcome to The Week Interview. I'm Sarah Birmingham. I'm obviously not Declan Ralph. He's away in London this weekend and I'm here instead with Ken Kilbride for our run through the local papers. We have every Saturday, as you know, at this time, we take a look at the stories that affect us. You won't have heard much about them anywhere else in the news this week. We'll be looking at stories instead that feature people or groups that you may know about, are interested in, or involved with. We'll feature stories about groups that represent and advocate for minorities in our community and further afield. But we'll also have the local stories that affect you. If you have a story you'd like us to feature on the programme, you can contact us by text to 087 69 44 500. Or an email at weekinterview@near.ie. And for those of you out there who love Twitter, we can be found at Near FM with hashtag weekinterview. Well, Ken, we've got some wonderful local stories this week, some good summer themed ones. There's an official notice out there now about the beaches, which is a story that we've been following for some time. Yeah, and there's an official notice out now about the beaches that swimming has been prohibited in.
Indeed, we'll go straight to that one. This has been a story that's been covered a lot in local media for the last week. You know, people will know that, you know, there's been closure notices placed on beaches in North Dublin. And what happens is, you know, that the county council will get the water tests on a regular basis. So while there was an awful lot of media comment about the beaches being closed earlier on in the week, the results came back on Thursday. So the updated situation is that, coming from Fingal County Council, that the do not swim notices have now been lifted. And they've been lifted at the three beaches, which were the Velvet Strand in Portmarnock, the Front Beach in Balbriggan, and Skerry South Beach. These were issued following overflows at the Portmarnock Strand pumping station and the Hampton Cove pumping station in Balbriggan due to technical problems. Irish Water and Fingal County Council are closely working to resolve the drainage issue in Fingal to ensure disruptions are minimised in the future. Irish Water is currently investing $85 million in wastewater projects in Fingal that are either at planning, design or construction stages. I'm sure they're more of planning than the construction. The technical problems at the pumping station in Portmarnock and Balbriggan, which caused this week's overflow, have now been resolved. It seems that there was a power surge, knocked everything out. Irish Water is now reviewing the pumping station's works at Hampton Cove to ensure that the pumps are able to deal with both normal and high flows and will replace the pumps should the problems continue. And the decision to issue the prohibitive notices in respect of swimming at Fingal beaches was made as a precautionary measure, where it's believed that there may be a deterioration in the water quality due to the suspected or anticipated pollution. It is done to ensure the health of bathers is not compromised, and beach users are requested to respect the notices when they're in place. Members of the public intending to enter the water at any beach in Ireland are advised to check the water quality in advance by assessing the EPA's website, which is splashepa.ie. And to be honest, there's a huge amount of information on that website on every beach in Ireland, not alone Fingal.
That's a fantastic resource. It's resource. Very important to, you know exactly what you are getting into.
What you're getting into. It'll tell you exactly where you are and what you got. Because as I say, we did look at a couple of weeks back in terms of, you know, some beaches which were actually closed for 2016. So having the rest of them out, particularly having those beaches which were out over the June bank holiday when it was actually sunny in Ireland for a change,
absolutely,
was a bit of a problem. So good news is beaches back open.
Brilliant. Well, that's very good news in the local area. You've also got some other good news stories from the locality to share with us this morning. There's an intriguing mural after being announced.
Indeed. This goes back. We looked at a story a couple of weeks ago in terms of the Clear initiative down in Kilbarrick, and there's another one coming up in the same area. So Kilbarrick Shopping Centre, which has received a creative makeover recently thanks to the imagination and artistic skills of some local transition year students. Excuse me on that one. The centre held a competition for local secondary schools and asked them to come up with an idea for a theme around community. The winning school was St Paul's, which I have to admit I went to. So good to see that they're still doing good things since I left.
Flying the flag there.
They're still flying the flag. And was given the opportunity to paint their design on the back of the wall of the centre, adding colour, character and showing off Kilbarrick's well sense of community. The students of the college created a design entitled Our Community, which represented the things that they love about Kilbarrick. The students had the chance to display their creativity and did a fantastic job in painting the mural within a week. "We enjoyed our time in Kilbarrick Shopping Centre," they said, "and are thankful for all the support they received." The guys are Dave Toner, Colm O'Byrne, Daniel Kavanagh, Mick James and James Nutton. It was a great experience to be involved in this competition and to have the opportunity to complete this mural during the transition year. "We hope that everyone enjoys the mural as much as we did painting it." Kilbarrick Shopping Centre said they would really like to thank the students and faculty and teachers in St Paul's for the creation of the mural. And an extended thanks has been given to Grange Builders Providers for giving all the paint.
Well, they've put their time of transition year to some very good use.
Indeed,
and it's
yes.
Great to see them supported by the community in that way as well.
Well, hopefully it'll be there for years to come.
Hopefully.
And then we were just looking at another story, and this goes back to a story we were looking at a little while back last month. And this is a little bit time sensitive because it happens at 1 o'clock today. So if you're in St. Anne's,
20 minutes to go.
Near the stables, yes, we'll get it in just in time.
The wonderful St. Anne's Park close to us here.
Indeed, it's only just down the road. Again, the reason why I was looking to group these stories together is it's St. Paul's backs onto St. Anne's. So, you know, as kids, you know, when we were sent out, you know, going across country run, meant, you know, leave St. Paul's, go run around St. Anne's.
Get all the sights in.
And get all the sights in. So Raheny Community First Responders will launch its third public access defibrillator in the Red Stables today at 1 o'clock. The group's second defibrillator was unveiled last month at the Bank of Ireland in Raheny. We talked last month about the library, which is next door to the library. Joe Mooney, who's the chairperson and coordinator of Raheny Community First Responders Group, said, "Since going live with the National Ambulance Service, we've been dispatched to over 40 calls. And now with this third public access defibrillator, it's another step in making our community safer for the people who live and work in Raheny. This public defibrillator wouldn't have been possible without the support of the public and the Raheny Business Association and our Race Night fundraiser. They'd also like to thank Bank of Ireland, who gave them the opportunity to put the second one on their branch. We've also been sponsored by Dublin City Council. And this one, I say, will be placed in St. Anne's Park in the Red Stables on June the 18th, which is today at 1 o'clock, which is 10 minutes away. The Raheny Community First Responders provide cardiac care and other emergency medical assistance to people in Raheny and surrounding areas while they're waiting on an ambulance. The group comprises of local volunteers trained in CPR and defibrillation. Every time the National Ambulance Service receives a call for the Raheny area, the first responders will be notified while the ambulance is being dispatched. If the responder arrives first, they will assist the patient while they're waiting for the ambulance crew. The first responders will respond to five medical conditions, which are cardiac arrest, heart attack, stroke, choking and drowning. So, I mean, this is a great local initiative. You know, this is, you know, people coming together, getting out and there and doing it. Last month, we looked at an initiative from a fireman in Finglas, and he developed a little app called Save a Selfie.
Yeah,
so what you did was you take a picture of yourself at the public defibrillator. And what happens is this gets geotagged. So if you're, you know, find someone who happens to have a heart attack, you can press this app. It'll tell you where the nearest defibrillator is. But we do know that there's three in Raheny. One's at the bank and there's one going to be in the same.
We now have another one as well. So that's a wonderful community resource to have there.
It's a great resource.
And a great reassurance to people as well that, you know, if they do find themselves in trouble, that there is a support there, you know, readily available in the community.
Well, someone's going to come to you, yes.
That app that was launched as well, you know, it ties in wonderfully with that as well. So, it's all very good and positive news today, and it's good to be able to share that as well. So coming up on the rest of the programme, I will speak shortly actually to Anne Ryan, and she's one of the leaders of Basic Income Ireland. They held a summer forum last week, which brought together a range of very insightful and experienced speakers to speak on the idea of the state providing each person with a basic income. So that's an interesting idea, and certainly something that we look forward to hearing more about further on in the programme. Then we'll also talk to Dublin Ultimate Frisbee team Jabba the Hook, who was formed by a group of friends from Dublin City University. They wanted to pursue their love of the sport beyond their university days, and their team now trains on Wednesdays and Saturdays in St. Anne's Park as well in Raheny, that great spot there, and they are on the lookout for some new members at the moment. So we'll speak to Dave from the group later on in the show.
90.3 Your community station.
Near FM.
You're very welcome back to Week in Review. I'm Sarah Birmingham and I'm here this morning with Ken Kilbride. We're delighted at the moment to be joined on the phone by Anne Ryan, who is one of the directors, one of the leaders of Basic Income Ireland, which is a very intriguing group. Anne, can you explain to us a little bit more about what Basic Income Ireland is and how it first began?
Yeah, good afternoon, Sarah. Yes, Basic Income Ireland is a group of kind of very diverse people campaigning to bring in a basic income in Ireland. And we're doing it really because we think that the current system for social welfare is completely broken and dysfunctional, and it doesn't serve people well at all. There's long delays in getting payment if you're in and out of seasonal or short contract work. There are time delays. It doesn't support people who are self-employed and whose work dries up, or if you have a small business and that fails, it's very hard to get support. Lone parents aren't allowed to cohabit, and that's very unfair. There's a lot of intrusion into people's lives through means testing. So we think this system that we have at the moment really isn't working, and we'd like to see a basic income in place. And that would be a very rights-based approach to support, whereby the state would give every legal resident, the state would distribute every week to every legal resident in Ireland a payment that would be enough to live a simple, decent life. It wouldn't be enough to cover luxuries and so on, but it would allow everybody, without any conditions attached, to have that basic floor of financial support. So it would be unconditional for every legal resident. You wouldn't have to sign on or anything. You'd just be registered at birth for it. And it would be unconditional, and it would ideally be sufficient to live a frugal but decent lifestyle. And we're doing this, okay, the system is broken that we have, but also we believe that this kind of approach to basic financial support really helps us to develop a caring society in Ireland, that it's an expression of the kind of care that we all can give to each other. It helps to improve the quality of life for everybody, and it recognises the basic dignity of everybody. And it's also really a key to economic stability and a kind of smart economy for the kind of ways that work and other society and economy are working out in the 21st century. We think it's much more suitable than what's in place at the moment.
The group held a summer forum in the Carmelite Community Centre last week. How did that go, and what kind of ideas came out of that?
Yes, we had our annual summer forum last Saturday in Dublin, and we had about 60 people there, and we spent from 10 to 4 talking about basic income, and people came from all over the country, and we started with some talks about how basic income would be good, kind of give men and women richer choices about how to live their lives. And just by having this basic floor of financial support underneath them, it will give everyone better choices. About our three key speakers, Barb Jacobson, Ursula Farrell and Shane Fitzgerald, talked about how choices for women and for men would be greatly improved in the way that they work, the way they could combine work and family life, how it would be good for lone parents. It would give people much better choices about childcare and so on. So we had a good, and it would give women financial independence as well. So it would also help women in some cases if they needed to leave bad relationships, if finance was a problem there. So we had a good discussion about that, and lots of questions about the level of basic income and how, you know, how much we should have it at. We reckon that in Basic Income Ireland, we reckon we could afford it in the country with the system that we have, that we could afford a basic income pegged at the current social welfare rates. We'd like to see them a bit higher, because the job seekers allowance is currently 188 euros a week, and we'd like to see it a little higher. But we've worked out that we could give it to everyone over 18, at the job seekers rate, which would be certainly a whole lot better than nothing. So we talked about a lot of that. And then in the afternoon, we divided up into groups around different themes. People suggested themes that they wanted to talk about in order to advance the cause of basic income in Ireland. So one group devised a little song, which is on YouTube at the moment, if anybody wants to look at it, a basic income song. Some others of us, we talked about how we can really get people aware of basic income and the possibility for basic income, because one of our problems in the group, and we're trying to advocate and push for basic income, is that a lot of people don't really know what we mean when we talk about it. So therefore, they're not asking their politicians about it. And we are trying to raise awareness among the general population about what a basic income is, the fact that we could afford it, how it could be brought in. So we talked about slogans and about going round to community groups. And by the way, we will always come to community groups and talk to people, you know, give a little presentation and then have a discussion about it. So if anyone's listening and they'd like to invite us to do that, they'd be very welcome to get in touch with us through our website. So we talked about also the fact that a basic income isn't a panacea. It's not by itself, it's not going to create the kind of equality and social justice and smart economy that we're looking for. It needs to be part of a suite of measures that include everybody's basic dignity around housing and education and healthcare and so on. So you find in some countries and some people talking about basic income will say, oh, just pay everyone the basic income and then leave them, let them buy everything, all the other services. But then others among, and we're on this side of the camp really, will be saying it's one of the things we need to do to create a more equal society, but it's a really important one.
And, you know, there might be certain arguments made against the idea of a basic income by people who maybe wouldn't be as well informed on it, you know, in terms of whether a basic income might be a disincentive for people to go out to work. And, you know, is that something that you've considered?
Yes, of course. Yeah, this comes up all the time, that why would anybody bother to do a job? And the thing about it is, about a basic income is that it's always tax-free, so you never lose it if you take up paid work. So therefore, it eliminates what people call the benefits trap, whereby if somebody is on social welfare and they take up a job, maybe a low-paid job, sometimes they can be worse off than when they were on the dole. So with basic income, this never happens. So there's always a financial incentive for people to take up a job, even if it's only a few hours a week or a part-time job or whatever. But what it does, on the other hand, then, is it allows people a bit of choice, that they don't have to take up a job that they really don't want to do, or, you know, something that's very exploitative. And we've seen that a lot of employers really are quite exploitative of workers nowadays. And it also, there's an awful lot of people doing work in Ireland and in the economy as a whole that doesn't receive any pay, like childcare, like looking after elderly people. Not everyone doing that qualifies for the job seekers allowance. There's an awful lot of voluntary work going on in communities, community development work, and that receives either no pay or very low pay. So a basic income would support all that kind of really valuable work that doesn't get valued in the economy at the moment. It supports the economy, but it's not recognised. And while a basic income doesn't actually pay people to do it, it's not payment for, say, childcare or for voluntary work. It's a basic financial support that allows people to choose the kind of work they want to do. So we, at the forum, we did talk about how we have this fetish in Ireland and elsewhere. When we say work, we really mean paid work or jobs, as there's so much other really valuable work to be done and being done, and that it allows, a basic income allows people to create their own jobs in some ways. It would put it would help people to start up partnerships and cooperatives and the kind of thing that we're really going to need if we're going to move into a more sustainable and equal sort of future.
It's a hugely intriguing idea and a model as well for the future, as you say. I'm just wondering if people would like to find out more about it or to get involved themselves, what's the best place for them to go to do that?
The best thing is to look us up on our website, basicincomeireland.com, or on Facebook or on Twitter, and contact us that way, and you'll see details of our meetings. We meet in Dublin once a month, and everyone is welcome. It's a very open and inclusive kind of format. And we're also very happy to travel to community groups or any groups around the country and in Dublin to, you know, to just do a short presentation and then to discuss the whole thing. And we're really looking for people to become more aware of the whole possibilities of basic income.
Well, if people are out there are interested in finding out more and in coming along to some of your events, they certainly could do worse than following your website and your updates and doing
that. And they can
that.
Join our mailing list as well if they just want to stay, you know, just to stay in touch.
Fantastic. There's a wide range of options there. Thanks very much, Anne, for coming on and for telling us all about that. And we look forward
Thank
to following its progress and to seeing how it progresses. Thanks very much and enjoy the weekend.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks.
90.3. Your community station.
Near FM.
You're very welcome back to The Week in Review. This is Sarah Birmingham here sitting in for Declan Rath, and I'm joined by Ken Kilbride as well, who has a couple of more very interesting local stories to bring us right now. He is the expert on local stories in the North and Northeast Dublin area. Ken, what have you been looking at today?
So just looking at a couple more local stories. So one of the ones we've been looking at is that there's been a 50-year anniversary for St. Colum Kill School in Swords, which is in Chapel Lane. And as part of the celebration events that are planned to mark the golden anniversary of the school, the Archbishop of Dublin, Dermot Martin, came out to the school last Thursday and had a blessing. On last Thursday, they had a photography exhibition. And what they did was they invited current and past pupils to come to the school. They also invited the parents, wider community, to come and see the photography exhibition and projects display. They also had a nice little facility on hand where they could print archive photos of past pupils. Then on the 22nd of June, they're going to have a time capsule. This will be sealed and reopened on the school's 75th anniversary for anybody with the maths out there. It's 2041. And contributions from parents are very welcomed. The school has a varied and interesting history, and it's only had four principals in those 50 years, and they've been Mr. Brendan Kavanagh, who was 66 to 78, Mr. Tony Connolly, who was 78 to 1980, Jim Barrett from 1980 to 2015, and Kieran Lyons from 2015 to present. The school was formed in 1966 when two schools were moved up together to form the Colum Kills Boys and Girls National School. After a couple of years, you know, they found they didn't have enough room for both, so the girls moved to a different location. And this was the first time that the title of St. Colum Kills was used and was bestowed on the school. And when they set it up, they had 311 students. In 1966, Swords was a very different place than it is today. It had a population of 1,892, somewhere over 25,000 at the moment. And no community centre. So it was decided that the school would be the focal point for the local community, where local concerts would be performed. And indeed, Brendan Grace made his debut there back in 1967 or 68.
There's an interesting bit of trivia right there.
Indeed, yes. He's been performing ever since, which is a good or bad thing, depending on your viewpoint. What happened was, there was a lady called Anna McGeldrick, who was a big singer back in the day. She got delayed in London and couldn't perform, and lo and behold, Brendan stepped up from the audience and performed, and has been doing it ever since.
That's what you were going to say. Declan stepped up from the audience there. I wasn't sure if he was performing in those days, but possibly.
Still in shorts, as they would say.
Still in shorts.
Renowned tenor Frank Patterson performed there. It was also the place where Fine Gaelian's GA had their bingo. The school was cost 120,000 euro. Pounds back in the day. It even got mentioned in the Irish Times and was referred to as having many modern advantages, including an assembly hall, a concert hall, a teacher's room, and a classroom for 6 room boys and girls. And by way of comparison, the school now has 25 teachers, 6 classroom assistants, a caretaker, a secretary, and 2 cleaners. The school is managed by a board of management with a lay chairperson, Mr. Thomas Shields, and there is a parents' association. While, however, back in 1966, The parish priest was the manager of the school, and a proposal to form a parent-teachers association really didn't make much very progress. There's been some very notable past pupils at the school. Among them have been Paul Flynn and Kieran Duff, both All-Ireland winners with Dublin. And of course, they brought back Sam Maguire to the school on various occasions, and the pupils have gone woohoo, particularly last year with the victory over Kerry.
Is that particularly special?
That's particularly special.
It is quite a historic team, certainly, so that's quite an accolade to boast. Absolutely. And we are in the centenary year still, of course. We've had many a commemoration and anniversary celebration over the past 6 months, and you have news, Ken, of yet another interesting commemoration that has taken place.
So again, we've looked at the list of itinerary and list of programmes being developed by Fingal County Council over the last 6 months. And they've been doing a lot to promote activities around 1916. And what they've done now is that they've, as we were saying at the time, is, you know, keep an eye on them because they're doing things across the year. So what they do now, they have launched an exhibition around archives.
And so what they've done,
it is, they've got together with, you know, the National Library, Collins Barracks. Mm. So they've gotten a load of exhibits from, you know, people in the area. You know, people have saying, you know, my father had a gun, hat, whatever.
They've and it's those things that people have hidden away in the attics and that, you know, whatever, that actually, you know, have a historical value to the country but mightn't have been recognised before or dug out before.
As it is. Things that have the story behind them rather than, you know, these letters or, whatever, you know, formal documents.
Absolutely.
So they've a load of that. They have an exhibition. It's in Fingal. It's in the county offices in Clonmel Howell. But you need to make an appointment to go and see it. I'm not sure it's not open to the public. But again, they've done great work. And you find lots of information about this and get lots more further information on fingal.ie.
Well, that's what we're checking out as well.
It's a great site.
Absolutely. And of course, today we couldn't hold the programme without recognising that the Euro Championships are on at the moment and Ireland are due to play France in less than an hour's time. So the build-up is well and truly underway in Bordeaux. Of course, we play the Belgians, who have several Premier League players on their side, and we'll certainly be up against the competition. But you have some interesting facts about Belgium and the Belgians to share with us as is appropriate for the day that's in it.
Indeed. At the moment, they say Belgium are ranked number 2 in the world. So they're actually doing very, very well. Now, they haven't won anything in terms of competitions, but they have a great team. But we can love them for the next 40 minutes or so. After that, you know, we have tear them apart. So the next 40 minutes, what can we say about Belgium? So the first thing we get is the highest point in Belgium is lower than the world's tallest building. The signal, the Botrage, in the High Pen Plateau in the far east of Belgium is the highest point at 694 metres, which is 2,100 feet, which is lower than Carn Tuchel, which is shorter than the Dubai Barge Tahal, which is 829 metres. So probably this is where the name comes from. Belgium, along with Netherlands and the Hollands and Luxembourg, are known as
the Low Countries. Exactly.
And this is why. Something else I didn't know. Belgium has more castles per kilometre than any other country in the world. Belgium produces more chocolate than most anywhere else in the world, and has been doing for the last 400 years. The first evidence of this goes back to 1635. Today, Belgium produces 230,000 tonnes of chocolate a year. And most interestingly, Brussels Airport has the highest chocolate sales of any unit in the world.
You're making them sound too good, Ken. We need to get that win over them now. Don't be fawning over them too much. They might have the highest chocolate sales in the world, but they won't have a win over the Irish football team today, we hope.
We hope.
It remains to be seen.
Number 4, Antwerp is the diamond capital of the world. It is estimated that the annual turnover is 29 billion, which is, you know, nearly a lot of Ireland's GDP. And it amounts to 8% of all Belgian exports. Diamonds have been traded there since 1747. Today, the city handles 80% of the world's rough diamonds, 50% of all cut diamonds, and 45% of all industrial diamonds. And as you say, Sarah, diamonds are girls' best friend.
That's it, exactly. Well, another reason to love Belgium for the next half an hour or so.
Another odd one about Belgium. Belgium has the lowest proportion of McDonald's per population in the developed world. I don't know.
It's a statistic to have, right? Absolutely.
They do like chips. And this is number 6. Now, there is an argument, and I've been following it online for the last couple of days because, you know, we're looking at this article. There is a thing, who invented chips and pommes frites? pomfrets are generally credited to France, but they say they have this version called frites, which are sort of, you know, then what they do is they use a particular Belgian potato, they deep fry them twice, put them in a little paper thing, throw some mayonnaise on it and give you a little fork. And I've been in Belgium, yes, and they are quite tasty.
Doesn't sound too bad.
They are quite good. They're not pommes frites, but they are different, so they're laying claim to chips as well.
Oh, sure, why not? You know, they have diamonds and chocolates.
Yeah, diamonds, chocolates, chips, footballers. Why not? Another one, might as well go straight to when we're talking about diamond chocolate, is beer. There's over 1,100 varieties of local beer, and the country often provides beer for international competitions, and they've, you know, won loads of them. There's a town called Spa in Belgium, which is the word where Spa comes from, and it's been.
There's another bit of trivia.
There you go, and this goes back to Roman times, and people used to come to the town. For their famed hot water springs for its healing and spiritual purposes.
We really shouldn't bash, should we? It does sound a bit enviable now when you put it like that.
Number nine, Belgian graphic designer Alan Bitte designed the Euro logo. It's on every piece of money, you know, must be seen billions of times. And number 10, going back to Belgium again, don't get this one. Belgium has more comic makers per square kilometre than any other country in the world, including Japan. Adventures of Tintin and the Smurfs are Belgian productions.
Very interesting.
So for the next 40 minutes, we can love Belgium, but after that,
about 37. I mean, we don't want to be we don't want to be wishing our boys any ill luck now for the afternoon. But they are taking on some very esteemed competitions. So all the best to them.
My prediction is a draw. I'll go for it.
We'll keep our love of Belgium alive after this evening, and no doubt the Irish fans will revel in all the spirit of the day and you know, appreciate all that is good about Belgium as well.
Indeed.
Hopefully we'll have the upper hand on the evening in question.
90.3 Your community station, Near FM.
Ken, we've got another couple of very interesting events and stories taking place across the north side this month and this week, and we'd love to hear a bit more about them.
Indeed. The first one we're looking at is a local man from Swords who will take on the challenge of climbing Africa's highest peak, which is Kilimanjaro. On the 9th of June, Daniel Wilson, manager of the Applewood Community Centre, will be trekking to the summit of Kilimanjaro, where he will proudly raise the Snowflake Autism support flag. Over the past 4 years in my work as community centre manager, I've seen lots of hard work put in by the committee and members and family that is the Snowflake Autism support service. I have fundraised through skydives, shaved my hair, ran races, done half marathons for charities like the Irish Cancer Society, ISPCC, Pieta House and various other well-deserving charities. However, I'd really like to work with a group where I can see the money is going to somewhere on the ground, somewhere local. The hard work and dedication that has been put into Snowflakes is such an inspiration to me, mainly because it's all for their families. If I can help them to raise awareness and hopefully funds that will enable them to reach their goals of building a dedicated autism centre of excellence in Swords, then this would be very worthwhile. Daniel said the idea for trekking up Kilimanjaro came from chatting with the guys in Snowflake about some of the challenges that their children face doing everyday tasks. This inspired me to think that if they have to overcome their own mountains every day, then I would overcome a mountain for them and place the Snowflake flag at the summit. In 2012, the Snowflake Autism Support Group was set up by a group of parents of children with autism in the area, and it's based at the Hollywell Community Centre and provides supports for 160 families, and the numbers continue to grow every week. So, good luck to the guy.
Absolutely, you can't wish him enough luck. It's great to see initiatives like that taking place in the locality, and it gives it a great lease of life now. It's fantastic story.
In sort of moving straight back and keeping in the Swords area, Fingal County Council recently held a civic reception to honour a local man, and that man was the Chief of Scouting Ireland, Mr Christy McCann, who's from Portrane. And he was recognised for his outstanding contribution to scouting in Ireland, and particularly his ongoing work in developing relationships with Fingal through the delivery of scouting facilities and events around the country. The Mayor of Fingal, Councillor David O'Connor, presented the award. I'm delighted to welcome his wife and Christy to the Council Chambers. Christy, a proud Portrane resident, is the most senior resident in our officer in Ireland. Scouting in Ireland has evolved over time and has evolved in its traditional image to become a modern organisation creating tomorrow's citizens. I'm proud to accept this award on behalf of Scouting Ireland, as I'm only one of 40,000, which is a lot of kids. Scouting covers all 32 counties in Ireland, and we welcome a lot of councils. Fingal County Council have stepped up to the plate when it comes to the management and engagement with Scouting Ireland. On behalf of Scouting Ireland, I would like to acknowledge Fingal County Council, because we're in Scouting Ireland. We believe that creating better communities is part of our remit, and Fingal County Council has helped us on that journey. Tributes have actually paid in from, you know, across the political divide. They were paid by Councillor Joe Newman, Councillor Dara Butler, Aidan Hinchy, Paul Mulville, and Councillor Mullachy Quinn on the night. The council has worked extensively with Scouting Ireland over a number of years in delivering events such as the 2001 Jamboree in Ardgillan Castle, which was attracted and attended 5,000 scouts. April 2016 saw another collaborative event with the Message of Peace commemoration at Newbridge House, which celebrated the 1916 Rising, which we talked about earlier, and remembering the 40 children who lost their lives during that time. And as part of the celebrations on the 24th, the 38 Rush Scout Group formed the Guard of Honour. So all we can say is, you know, thanks, Christy. Good luck.
It's great to see people recognised when they can make that kind of a contribution to the local area. And absolutely, I mean, we'd like to kind of extend Near FM's congratulations to him as well, I'm sure. Talking about Newbridge House there, as you were, there's another very interesting event coming up soon there, celebrating some of Dublin's, you know, culinary talent, and a great day out for families and for children awaits.
Well, it's actually, it's you know, I was lucky I went to it last year. I was manning a stand for someone. We're talking about the Flavours of Fingal. And the really interesting about the Flavours of Fingal, it's an agricultural show, but it's in Dublin.
Which is an unusual kind of an event.
I mean, there's a big one down in Tullamore, there's places in Brewer, you know, but a bit far to travel for a day out to look at farm machinery. So in Dublin, we have the Flavours of Fingal. It's now in its fifth year, and it takes place next weekend, which is the 25th and 26th in Newbridge House. Again, it's supported by Fingal County Council. And this year's Flavour of Fingal will be another action-packed 2 days event, combining the sights and sound of a traditional agricultural show with unforgettable food and fun for families. It's just a stone's throw from city life. The Flavours of Fingal would again host a mix of foodies, farming attractions, which include food stalls, local produced delicacies, craft and cooking demonstrations, babe-style sheep trials, and a range of livestock shows. There's also loads of stuff for the kids to do. There's bouncy castles, face painting, archaeological digs, spy bus, a cycle obstacle course, kids golf, and lots more. There's other attractions including equestrian, show jumping, a mobile petting farm, an animal theatre, a magic show, biodiversity programmes, cats and dogs agility shows, lots for everyone. Just let people know, Newbridge House is just off the N1. It's literally, I live in Bowman. It takes me less than 15 minutes to get there. I go there on a regular basis. So if you're looking for something good and interesting to do next Saturday, Sunday,
you could do worse. Flavours of Fingal, absolutely. And it's great to see sometimes that Dublin, you know, can be forgotten, that there is kind of a county outside the city centre itself, you know, and it's great to see events like that being supported and taking place.
People do forget that about Dublin, and I do know, because I drive a lot through what's called the North County. And once you leave, you know, go past Swords, it's green fields.
Well,
and lots of them.
And lots of very nice coastline as well, no doubt.
Indeed,
so
yes.
It's wonderful to be able to have that on our doorstep, and hopefully people will avail of it, and all the great attractions that are lined up for the day itself as well. Well, we've just about almost reached the end of the show. We have a minute left now. What are your predictions, Ken, for this afternoon for our big game taking place against the Paladins?
I'm going for 1-1.
You go for 1-1. Well, yep. I hope we'll strike a win on one of our last remaining group games so that we might make it to the quarterfinals.
Belgium will then need to beat Sweden, and then we'll go through to third place.
Well, that would do for us, to be fair. To get any further than the group will be, you know, kind of a nice little mark of recognition for some of our great players that we have. So that is it for the week, for a week in review. I've been Sarah Birmingham, and I've been joined by the inimitable Ken Kilbride on our local stories and our local knowledge. Declan, of course, will be back in his proper place next week at the same time, and he will no doubt have some judgment to cast over our job on the show this morning. But here we are at the end of the year. there, and I hope you've enjoyed it and our chats, our stories, and that's a great interview with Anne as well. Well, she was a great interviewee, I should say, from Basic Income Ireland, and it was fantastic to hear about that. If you have an item that you would like us to feature on the programme any week, you can contact us on email at weekinterview@near.ie or Declan's on Twitter at Declan Rath. We'd like to thank you very much for listening this week. We'll, as Declan says, see you soon on the radio.